Welcome to the Carve a Monster Hunter podcast, where you can bone up on hunting monsters. Episode 19. I am your host, SBJ.
And I'm Micah.
Here we are.
Here we are.
Sweet 19.
Almost 20.
Wait, isn't there like sweet 16, 17 forever?
Yes.
Eight on cloud 18 and
what?
No.
No? Cloud 18?
Golden 19?
I think, never mind.
This is a Monster Hunter podcast where we talk about Monster Hunter week in and week out every single Thursday. Both very excited for Monster Hunter. I'm speaking for you. I'm assuming you are excited for Monster Hunter World.
Oh, you know it. I'm very excited.
Sounds sarcastic.
No, I am. I promise.
Okay.
I'm sick.
Yes.
So I sound less enthusiastic about everything.
You are sick. You're ill.
I'm real sick.
Falling apart.
I'm doing like a cool hand movement, like sick means cool, but actually it's just sick.
Yeah, not like sick as in wicked.
I'm both.
Wicked sick.
Wicked sick, bro.
We got a special episode for you guys. So we're going to start off this episode with a couple quotes that we pulled from the large amount of articles that existed on the internet last week.
Yeah.
That we didn't get time to tackle last week.
That everybody was really excited about.
Yeah.
Lots of coverage.
There's a lot of stuff, a lot of little stuff too. I know there are like YouTube videos of little things in gameplay. I think on the Monster Hunter subreddit, there's a full capture of Kool-Aid La Cool if you want to check that out. So there is a bunch of content out there. I have these quotes pulled. I had them pulled from last week. I feel like they're good talking points. And it also relates to the second half of this episode, which I think one of the quotes that stood out of all the quotes is Monster Hunter.
Are we doing this?
Is like Destiny.
Yes.
Crossed with Dark Souls.
Okay. I'm on.
Plus dinosaurs.
You got me. I'm hooked.
That was a quote from The Verge.
Yeah.
They are a technology website, but sometimes they dabble in gaming and, you know, pop culture and everything else.
Yeah.
People
were mad.
People were very mad about that quote. So what I did is I got that person on the show, Sam Byford. That will be
boots on the ground journalism. Straight to it. Everybody's mad at this dude. Let's go talk to him.
Let's go get him on. Sam is a writer for The Verge. He lives in Japan. We talk a little bit about that. I ask him about the quote. He explains it. And then he actually gives his history. He's been a Monster Hunter player since 3 Frontier. I don't know what the Japanese
3G?
Version. Not 3G. The one before 3G. The normal
third. Portable third?
Portable third, yes. Yeah. Or Freedom Unite. I'm not sure which one. I can't remember. I interviewed him like 4 days ago. So
okay.
At this point,
yeah.
I don't remember it completely, but that will be the second part of the article podcast.
That's welcome.
Falling apart over here.
Welcome to the Carve a Monster Hunter website where you can listen to us just reading
articles. Yeah.
That's it.
So that's a great interview, and we'll get to that in the second half. But before, and then of course, we're going to end with our monster of the week, which this week is Astalos. Spoiler for the end of the show. Big spoiler here.
Which is, I feel like we're on the third in a row of the monster of the week matches up with what armor you're hunting.
Yeah.
In Double Cross on the stream.
So if you tune in on Thursday nights on twitch.tv/pkmncast, you'll
get those spoilers.
Probably know what the monster of the week is going to be next week.
Yep. I've not been playing Double Cross that much.
You haven't.
I'm
committed.
I'm going to be straight with you.
You're over it?
I think I'm over it.
Is it because of the language or it's just because of...
It's because Monster Hunter World is so close.
Is it because of... It's really because of Odyssey.
Well, Odyssey has a hand in that. But it's because World is so close and everything that I see in World is everything that I don't want in Monster Hunter Double Cross. And I feel like I can just wait it out. For World, especially with the beta coming in December. I was asked this on stream today, and I thought about it, and I was like, maybe I want to just play the game and I want to understand it, and I want to have wish lists, and I want to have all of the new mechanics. Like, I'd rather just do that. I think all of the world news has spoiled me for Double Cross.
That's fine.
It's still great.
I'm too committed now to continuing out the next 12 weeks.
Oh, absolutely.
And I wouldn't want, like, Thursday nights have kind of become special in the aspect of, like, the people who do listen to the show come out.
Yeah.
And they hunt with totally. Us. And even though I wish it was Monster Hunter World, and I can wait, that's fine.
Yeah.
And I know that I probably won't hit, like, Hunter rank 735 in the next 12 weeks. I know that's...
Never say never.
That's not a reality. I've accepted that. I still enjoy being with those people.
You just got to get the crew in there, the Carve crew in there,
Carve crew.
With their super, super late game gear.
The Hog Ham crew?
Yeah, just run you straight to HR 700.
HHC? Hog Ham crew?
Yeah, there you go.
Squad.
And that's not to say that I'm not going to play it again, but it's just at this point, like it's...
I think you had more enjoyment last week just being on the couch with chat. That you probably would have playing the game.
I really enjoy the aspect of being on the stream from the perspective of like hanging out with people, hanging out with listeners and chatting with people. Like, that's great. I love that. And if I were playing Double Cross at some point, that would be fine too. But I just don't.
You get your Monster Hunter World. Fix by just talking with Monster Hunter people.
And I want World. Just give me World.
And I get my Monster Hunter fix by adept dodging.
Yeah. And yelling about it every time you do.
I will never not yell. I don't know what I'm going to do in World. I got to yell about something.
We'll all be proud of you, whatever it is.
Yeah. I'll have to think of something.
The meat. Cooking the meat.
Nah, cooking the meat's not satisfying to me. Like, I like the jingle, but there's something about adept dodging where it gets your adrenaline going. Yeah. I did it.
It feels good.
It does feel good. Okay, so I got 4 articles here. I had more quotes, but I just narrowed it down to 4, so because we didn't want to run too much overtime. I know like there are listeners that love long shows, but really trying to stick to the hour format.
Yeah,
there are definitely listeners, and they're not as vocal. But like my friend Greg, you know Greg.
Yeah,
but he's like every time I see you put out an hour and a half podcast, this is for my other show.
Yeah,
too long.
I mean, it's like the hour format's good because it's like
it's
people's
good.
Commutes are probably like a half hour to work and a half hour home. So.
I mean, when we originally started, we were aiming for 30 minutes and then kind of slowly bumped up to 45. So that 45 hours is still what we're aiming for. Maybe in the future, we'll go a little longer.
Yeah.
I'm sure when World drops, we'll have like the longest podcast ever.
We'll have a lot of content.
So the first quote is from The Verge. I'm just going to read it, but we can talk about it a little bit. But I just, like I said, Sam Bideford, the person who wrote this article, we can get all his thoughts a little bit later on. But I'll read the quote here. It says... There's a small hardcore base in the West, sure, but nothing like the mainstream success seen in Capcom's homeland, referring to Japan. If Monster Hunter World doesn't change that, I'm not sure anything will. From what I've played so far, it preserves almost all of Monster Hunter's unique appeal while framing it radically different and more accessible in a more accessible way. With versions for PS4, Xbox, PC, it's the first legitimate technical upgrade in the series history. It's the first Monster Hunter game that feels like it's designed for online play, and it's the first title to rethink some of the series' most off-putting conventions. We asked this question to Eric's when Eric's was on, of if this game doesn't do well, I don't know what else Capcom can even do at this point.
Yeah, and we've touched on it since, too, just in general. Like, when we had our whole episode about why it hasn't been successful here, like... This is kind of it. Like, if they don't do this, if this doesn't pan out, there's not really much else they can do. Like, this is the formula that should work. And if it doesn't, they got nothing.
And that's not to say, like, if this doesn't sell amazingly well, that Monster Hunter is going to just close up.
Oh, yeah. No,
I'm
totally.
Sure they can easily make another portable game, whether that's 3DS or Vita or Switch or
I just think
N-Gage.
N-Gage. Did you just engage? I think it'll just mean that like there's not going to be really any push in the West if this doesn't pan out. Like, they've always done well in Japan. They'll probably still continue to do well in Japan. The cost for localization, if this doesn't work out, which I find highly unlikely at this point, the cost for localization and marketing here probably is enough that they would, if this didn't work, they'd be like, well, why would we do that again? We'll just stick to Japan. We'll maybe localize it or do it the same thing that they've been doing.
Right.
You know, like
we get every other version.
Right.
And that's fine. And then people get very upset that they have to wait 8 months. And understandably.
Yep.
I hate waiting for Monster Hunter because I want to play it now. I want it now.
Yeah. I highly doubt that that's going to happen, though. I find it really, really hard to believe that this is going to, this will not do at least as well as they expect.
Yes.
At this point.
It has to do well.
Yeah.
It looks so good.
And it's getting a lot of attention, probably more attention than Monster Hunter has had. I don't know, maybe ever here.
This quote is from the Polygon article. Sorry, I don't have the author here for these. As to whether fans that have stuck with the series for the last 13 years will like the changes, Sirimoto said early feedback has him confident in their iterations. Quote, We knew we don't want to make changes that will make people who are familiar with the series pick it up and say, well, they changed the game I love, he said. Quote, we want to make the game that you love better than ever and bring more people on so it has even more fans, end quote. Yeah. And that was from Polygon. I played it at PAX. It felt exactly like Monster Hunter every single step of the way.
Yeah.
I probably had about an hour with it total because I had three different PlayStations. I had three different play sessions.
PS Pro, PS4 Pros, or
I don't know if they were pros or not. They were just handing me pros. Every time you kill an Anjanath, Capcom hands you a PlayStation.
You get a free PS4 Pro.
Yeah,
better than like what, a dollar for a platinum trophy or whatever.
I played two rounds of the hammer and then one round of the lipo gun.
Okay,
and then my girlfriend Irene, she played dual blades, and she said it felt amazing as a dual blade user of her. My friend Kyle never played Monster Hunter, went in with an insect glaive, and he walked away saying, I'm buying this game. Never played Monster Hunter before. This is what I want.
Pretty good. Those are good things to hear.
It feels good.
I think that's a good response, though, that in that article, because that, I think, was a lot of people's concern, a lot of fans' concern when they saw the E3 trailer. Pretty much everybody was like, well, they ruined it.
I don't think everyone was like that.
No, people saw that. Many like hardcore Monster Hunter fans saw that E3 trailer and went, "They ruined it. They're gonna dumb it down. It's gonna be like streamlined. It's not gonna be, you know, whatever.
It's
like,
not portable.
Monster Hunter's over." And it sounds,
you're telling me
like
that the internet likes to exaggerate.
No way. It's almost like Ryozo, right? Ryozo-san had some kind of idea that maybe they should make a game that people will like, including the fan base that made the game popular in the first place.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Who would have guessed?
Who would have guessed it? Amazing.
Yeah, and like you said, I think it's like a warming feeling for them to mention that we know that we have this hardcore following.
Yeah.
And while we understand we want to get new people, we want to make sure our hardcore fans that have been with us for the last 13 years, they're also just as happy.
Mm-hmm.
I would say I'm a hardcore fan. I'm not a good fan. I'm bad at the game. That doesn't mean I'm not hardcore.
Same.
I'm just bad.
Yeah, me too.
I'm a very slow player.
Apparently you can block flashes with a shield.
Oh yeah, that was the one thing we got wrong last week.
Yeah, primarily me.
That makes you make that.
I apologize.
We have to move you
on Twitter
from the hardcore bracket to the non-hardcore,
filthy casual
bracket. Only you wouldn't believe the shield blocks you can get. The Dark Souls of shield blocking. This is from GameSpot, not GameStop.
Okay.
That is
a very important distinction.
Yes. Quote. It starts off with a quote. I don't know how to say his name. Sirimoto?
What? Oh, Sugimoto.
Sugimoto.
Yeah,
got
sorry.
It. Okay. My apologies.
I heard the R and I was like, I must be thinking of the wrong name.
Okay, so quote, even though you failed the quest, we don't want it to feel unfair. Sugimoto says, quote, It has to be something where you realize, oh, I need to do better next time. Next time you jump in, you're going to see what you're going to see that move coming. You're going to read that tell better. And you're going to say that this is the time I get out of the way and then I'm going to attack. And then the satisfaction of having improved on that is really a key part of the Monster Hunter experience. End quote. GameStop. GameSpot.
You had one job.
I like set myself up.
You got it right
up
the first time.
I set myself up not to mess up, and then I still did.
Set yourself up for failure.
It's an excellent quote.
That is a good quote. And it's very true. I think it applies to Monster Hunter in general over the years, but I think it's something that people who are new to it are going to find. And it's still relevant. Like, these are all, there's tons of new monsters that none of us have fought before, except for maybe a handful of people who have early access to the game. Not naming any names, but we still have to learn what the movements are, what the patterns are. Like, we're going to die a bunch of times until we figure it out, and then we'll be fine. We'll go in and we'll clean house. Then we'll be like running in and getting drops every 5 minutes.
Then we'll be the hardcore of hardcore.
Yeah, roll with the squad and just murder everything in sight. It's a very good quote, though.
That quote just... We've both shared our first experiences with Monster Hunter, and that quote is my first experience with Monster Hunter. It was failing, and then every single time realizing why I was failing, making improvements, learning that, oh, when the monster does this, it means it's going to do that next, or if it rolls in a ball after you, it's going to then sit down afterwards on top of you.
Yeah.
Talking about that silly bear.
talking about my boy Arzeros.
Yeah. The AZ. Yeah. But
it's very much the I was going to say the Dark Souls experience. I don't even
the Dark
we're stuck
well,
in
well,
this.
I mean, Arzeros is the Dark Souls of bears.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that's even though it was a fumble, that's still true. Like, that's the Dark Souls thing too. Like, that's a good way to draw that comparison. You run around a corner and something stabs you. Clearly there to just troll you. Like, you come around a corner and get murdered, and then you learn.
Dark Souls is trolling.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Monster Hunter is not
trolling. No, it's not. I mean, sometimes it feels that way. Don't get me wrong.
You mean when Ketsu just...
But you learn.
Targets you over and over and keeps jumping on you.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah,
or you get bubble beamed.
He's not trolling at all.
And you slip and slide right into a water jet, and then you're dead.
We're really going to wear this Dark Soul... joke out by the end of this episode, aren't we?
Yeah. We got a hammer at home, though.
Is that a pun? Was that like a...
No, it could be, though.
Okay. Got a really gun lance.
Nope.
Next article.
It's not.
Oh. All right. Never mind. I was playing Pokemon tonight.
Okay.
It wouldn't be a Monster Hunter podcast if I didn't bring up Pokemon.
Yeah. Because you hunt monsters and then you catch them.
Yeah. You just don't carve them.
They're the same game.
Not yet.
Monster Hunter is the Pokemon of Dark Souls.
One of the reasons, so again, going back to this quote from GameSpot, one of the reasons why I really, really, really like Monster Hunter is because it does feel rewarding. And so, for example, I was catching a Mewtwo tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Just your normal level 70 Cerulean Cave Mewtwo.
Just the standard.
Nothing special about it.
Yeah.
0.3% catch ratio, as
of course
all the legendary Pokemon have.
Yeah.
You know, that with you know, getting it down to red, paralyzing it, maybe putting to sleep, that jumps up to about 6% with a Pokeball, about 3% with a Pokeball, about 6% with an Ultra Ball.
Yeah.
You know, statistics, Pokemon, very
statistics.
Math-heavy game. And it took me about an hour.
Yeah.
And to get Mewtwo to the point where it was quote-unquote catchable, that part took about 5 minutes. The other 55 minutes of that hour.
Straight RNG.
Was just me throwing balls.
Yeah.
There's nothing I could do to better that catch rate. And that's not fun.
No.
Whereas
it's
in
not.
Monster Hunter, if I fail with that monster, I have learned something and I can improve.
Mm-hmm.
I can't improve catching Mewtwo. I've been playing Pokemon games for 20 years. I have never improved catching Pokemon. There's no way.
Because you can't.
It's just math.
It's just math.
And at the end of the day,
it's
that's
just
not...
numbers, and sometimes they're randomly generated, and you just get lucky or you don't. And sometimes you get really unlucky and then you just can't catch an Entei anymore.
I was very excited when I caught it. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But the excitement in Monster Hunter definitely comes from getting better.
And there's multiple ways that you can do that. You can do that through, you know, farming gear. You can do that through upgrading gear. You can do that through...
playing with friends.
Charms, playing with friends. You can do it through just learning attack patterns better. You can, I mean, there's any number of... Granted, there is some level of, like...
You get a time at the
unexpected.
End. Unexpected. That's a... way to like, oh, I can beat that. I can beat that time.
Yep.
You get all these little things that encourage you that you can do this better.
And there are some like random elements like attack patterns and things like that. I mean, you can know what an attack pattern is going to be, but sometimes they do multiple things one after another and you get caught up and that's that. But on the whole, you know, like, oh, that was just a bad run. Or I didn't do this right because it was a bad run. I can go back with better gear, more people, whatever, and do it again.
Mm-hmm.
I've learned something. I can be better at this. Where Pokemon is 6%. Good luck.
Good That's luck. It. Hopefully you don't run out of Pokeballs.
Or see you in an hour.
Hopefully it doesn't struggle itself to death and you got to start that whole thing over again.
I think the important thing is that when you have to... This is maybe a tangent, and it's more a Pokemon complaint than it is a Monster Hunter complaint, but when a game puts you in a position where in order to do something, your only real option is to save beforehand and reset if you fail it, that's bad design.
Yes, I 100% agree.
That's just bad design.
But people will save before they encounter that Pokemon, because if they mess up, they can turn the game off.
Yeah.
And just to tie this back to Monster Hunter so we don't go too long without mentioning it, I've never saved before a hunt because I felt like, oh, if I fail this, I'm out something.
Right.
Like, I've always walked away from a failed hunt going, okay, we could have done this better.
Yeah.
Or, oh, I was clearly wearing the wrong armor set, or I'm just not ready for this fight yet.
Right. There's not devastating consequence for failing a hunt. And that, I think, is important. It's not like... you miss out on something permanently if you fail a hunt. You can always go back and do that hunt again. You can always try for more loot that you're trying for. Like, there's always options.
Pokemon has the mechanic where there's a 1 in 4,000 chance that the Mewtwo you'll encounter will be a different color. Called shiny. People love that.
Love the shiny.
Love the shiny. And to me... while I think it is cool to get a shiny Pokemon, I don't think it's good game design to encourage your player base to turn off your product and to then go through the start menu and log back in and then try again and go, oh, 2 out of 4,000, still not it. Turn off your product and do it again. That's not fun. That's not good design.
No.
The fun is getting the shiny Pokemon, absolutely, because it's 1 in 4,000.
Right.
But the methods of getting it are not fun. That's a problem. Yeah, that fail state is a problem. And you can get other shiny Pokemon through SOS Battle, which doesn't involve restarting. And I'm not saying legendary Pokemon should be SOS Battle. I'm not saying we should continue talking about Pokemon. But I'm just saying the fail state in Monster Hunter, even though you don't walk away with... well, sometimes you even do walk away with rewards if like you know you're going to fail and you're like, well, subquest is done, let's get out of here.
Yeah.
You still walk away going, okay, now I know what to prepare for next time. It's not like in Pokemon where it's like, oh, that one wasn't shiny. What can I do? You can't do anything. That's just luck.
Did the best I can with what I got. Reset the game.
Monster Hunter is very, very rewarding in both rewards. Well, sometimes rewards aren't that great.
Yeah.
But you get rewards every time. Sometimes luck isn't on your side in the rewards. Get that. That's fine.
Yeah.
The reward is you improving as a person or as a hunter.
Yeah. It's rewards in victory and actual loot, which is great. Like, those two things should be the rewards. Those two things should be enough to keep you going. I want to keep doing hunts. I want to keep getting better at this. It shouldn't be... oh, I got the thing that I should have gotten because I'm lining up the stars in the right way and there's nothing else I can do.
Yeah.
An hour later, I finally got it. Like, it shouldn't be that.
I'm always I'm a big Pokemon fan, but I love games that reward you for your time. And I feel like Monster Hunter is one of those games that does that very well.
Yeah. You're always getting some kind of reward to some degree. I mean, we're kind of going in circles here, but you're getting rewards if you win.
The Dark Souls of rewards games.
It's because you roll in circles around the enemy.
And then you dodge.
Yes.
Yeah, I understand.
Just like we're dodging, continuing this episode by rolling in circles.
next quote here is from Eurogamer. Across the pond, I think they say.
Across the pond. That I think would be correct.
This is a quote. Really, the most important thing we've been focused on is conveying Monster Hunter to the best ability to the rest of the world, says director Yuya Tokada. I'm really bad at names. I apologize.
I'm bad if I'm not looking at them.
Quote, it's less about changing the design process, but more about focusing deeper on what makes Monster Hunter Monster Hunter. We're a Japanese company making games for a large Japanese market where it's very well received. But it's also about understanding and researching what the world expects from modern games. We do have this Japanese game that we want everyone to enjoy. We're not conscious of trying to appeal to a global audience in that sense. It's about appealing to the world, but also to the individual player. And that was from Eurogamer.
Huh.
I think that's an interesting statement. We're not trying to appeal to a global audience. We're trying to appeal to the world, but also individual players.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's in the title. Monster Hunter World. It's there. It was there all along.
I think what they mean by global audience, and maybe I'm completely off the mark, so you can tell me if I'm wrong.
Okay.
But to me, when somebody goes, I want to make a game for a global audience, to me that sounds like, I want to make a free-to-play game because I want it in everyone's hands.
Yeah.
Whereas the world... to world/individual players sounds to me like I want to make a game that people remember and talk about. And like that seems similar.
Yeah. I mean, I get what you're saying. It sounds similar, but one sounds more genuine than the other, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like just getting your game in everybody's hands doesn't necessarily mean everybody's going to love that game.
And I think it's also saying like we know people love what we have. And we're not trying to force that to everyone.
Or could love what we have, but they don't know yet.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's also something funny about the sentence, focusing deeper on what makes Monster Hunter Monster Hunter. I just like the back-to-back Monster Hunters. It makes sense. It just makes me smile.
Take a page from that. This is The Carve, a Monster Hunter podcast about Monster Hunter.
We did say that.
We did at one point, yeah.
And then we were like, that's kind of
redundant.
Yeah.
A little too much. What makes Monster Hunter Monster Hunter?
Monster Hunter is Monster Hunter.
Yeah. I like that thought, though. I like the thought of, like, this is a game meant that we're trying to get the world to enjoy. And tying that into, it's Monster Hunter World. And also, it's a worldwide release. Mm-hmm. On the same day, like, we're trying to get everybody involved at the same time. And it feels that way.
Yeah.
It feels very much more socially connected already before the game's even out than it ever has, I think. And that's important, too.
Well, I think we'll... Oh, wait. There is one more thing I want to do. Hold on.
Was that a... That
was the rewind. This will probably get cut.
Rewind trumpet.
Two things. Off the Reddit. This Reddit is this is by Duke Lukewarm on Reddit.
That's a really good name.
It is. It is great. I don't know if they translated it, but they have a tweet to the Monster Hunter Official Japan, which I can't read because I don't read Japanese. But pretty much the tweet says, players who join an active quest past 10 minutes will get no rewards.
Whoa.
But will still get carves.
Oh, interesting.
So I just want to know what your thoughts on that. Because I talk a lot, I'll go ahead and give you my thoughts.
Okay.
Which are, I think that's fine. I think anyone who's joining a quest that late is probably only joining because they want to help the players in the quest succeed. They're not joining for themselves.
Yeah.
If they were interested in the loot, they would have been there at the start of the quest.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's also, I feel like what that sounds like to me is, hey, if you're going to try and just jump in on somebody's win at the last minute, you're not going to get to.
Right.
You can get the carve, but you're not going to get anything else.
Yeah. So that's another way of looking at it.
Yeah.
Because like if you were hunting and you've been in there for like 20 minutes, my thought is this is probably taking longer than expected, or maybe they just need help. So let me just join.
Yeah.
I've always, that's just my mindset though of like, oh, I don't need the loot. Like even when we hunt on Thursday nights, it's like, just pick whatever. I don't care about the loot. I'm here just to help you.
Yeah.
But you make a good point. I didn't think of that of like, oh, let's see which quests are close to ending.
Close to completion.
Let's just jump in and get some easy loot.
We ride in there for some free loot. Get that free loot. You still get the carve, though, which I'm assuming is probably like a mechanic that they can't actually implement.
I think
where
you
like,
should still
you
get the carve.
Get the carve, you know?
You should. The carve.
The carve.
I think
you can always get the carve.
You always get the carve.
Whether you want it or not.
Every Thursday. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, every Thursday.
Podler. You make a good point, though. And it's like the optimist version versus the pessimist version of this is so you can do this thing and it's fun versus don't do this thing.
Both sides of the coin. The last bit of news, the true last bit of news before we get to break, is Monster Hunter World is the Game Informer cover. Is that how you say it?
Yeah, I think so.
It's on the cover of Game Informer.
I don't know what else you'd call it.
For December, which I think means this month. It's always like
a month ahead.
You worked at GameStop. You should know.
Yeah, both did.
Peddling those magazines.
Got to get those magazines out. How else are you going to get ours? This is the currency. The currency is you can work. Sell those magazines.
There's some people have went ahead. I know you can get like physical versions of the magazines, digital versions of the magazines. There are some scans of the magazines on the subreddit. So there's lots of ways to see what is in there.
Has this ever happened before? Has Monster Hunter ever been on the cover of like Game Informer or I guess just gaming magazines in general?
I feel like this is the question
English
we get wrong.
Gaming
this
magazines?
Is the will we get this question right of the show?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I'm not sure. I want to say I feel like I saw 3U on a cover.
I feel like there were a lot of opportunities for it to be previous like covers for game magazines, but I just don't know. I'm saying like English game magazines because I'm sure it's been on plenty of Japanese game magazine covers. I mean, either way, I feel like this is still kind of big, you know?
Oh yeah.
It's kind of big having the game featured on a game magazine cover, I guess. I don't know. Game magazine's still like is it a big deal?
I'm assuming this is a huge assumption.
Yeah.
I'm assuming if you're still subbed to Game Informer,
yeah,
you're probably looking for you're probably consistently looking for new games to play.
Yeah, maybe.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, why
I mean,
else would you be getting the magazine?
People collect them, don't they? Isn't that like a thing?
But like my favorite thing in Nintendo Power when I was getting it back in the day.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, what are the games coming out? Like that was such a big section to me as a kid.
But here's the deal. The internet. That's a thing.
The internet is a thing, yes.
I mean, I think from the perspective of like you can put a magazine, I don't know, in the bathroom or something or on a coffee table.
Excuse
and like
me?
You have access
never
to
take
a thing
a, you
to
never
read.
Take a book into the bathroom.
You have access to a thing to read in a moment of maybe inconvenience as a guest at somebody's house that you can like read something. I don't know.
But I, like also going into a store and being like, what's this cover game?
Yeah.
Is probably like the person asking that is clearly the person that is new to the series. Right?
Yeah.
Because they're asking the question.
Yeah.
What is this?
And I mean, I could be way wrong. Like, I'm just genuinely curious how much business, I guess, Game Informer as a magazine gets anymore. But
I'm assuming they're doing well. They're still making magazines.
Yeah. If they're still making them, there's got to be some level of success there.
I went back to 2008. Looked at all the covers.
Yeah.
Not seeing Monster Hunter. But March 2007 had Darth Vader on. And February 2007 had a game called Blue Dragon. I bet you remember that.
I do remember that. Mistwalker, I think, was the game company. That was when all the, like, Square Enix, ex-Square Enix folks banded together and made their own game company. They made that and Lost Odyssey.
May 2003, Counter-Strike.
Oh.
Was on the cover.
Not bad.
You could probably make a podcast about what games have been on the cover of magazines.
And then highlight them each month.
This week, I'm just seeing if there's any Dragon games.
You know there's going to be a Rathalos on there. It's got to be a Rathalos.
I was thinking maybe Try or maybe...
Yeah, I thought 3U would probably be the most likely scenario, but I guess that is not the case.
February 2014, Evolve.
That doesn't count.
May 2014. Tell me if you've heard of this game.
Okay.
Fortnite.
Wait, 2014?
Yep.
That game has been in, like, development that long?
Yeah, it's been in development, I think, for like 5 or 6 years.
And it's still not done, huh?
They're still working on that. Okay, tell me if you've heard of this.
Okay.
Before we go to break.
All right.
October 2015. What do you think was on the cover?
October 2015. What was popular at that time? Fallout year was the year later. Was it? Maybe that was 2015. Was it Fallout?
No.
It wasn't. Okay.
It was Dark Souls 3. And with that, we'll take a break.
Full circle. Full rolling circle around Dark Souls.
We are back from our break, and I am here with Sam Byford. Did I say that right?
You did, Byford.
Oh, awesome, awesome. Cool. So you are a writer for TheVerge.com, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Great. Correct. And I have a million questions to ask you, but I have to get one thing out of the way because I think a lot of people suddenly know who you are, and it's because of a specific quote. So if you don't know who Sam is, I bet when I read this quote, you'll know exactly who he is.
What could this be?
Which is, this is off TheVerge.com, published November 1st. Monster Hunter is Destiny crossed with Dark Souls and dinosaurs.
I can see how, I did get a lot of feedback on this quote, as you can imagine. And I can see how kind of, if you only hear that quote it by itself, or if you just see the kind of the bright pink font full quote, posted on Twitter or whatever, I can see that that might sound sort of trite and over the top, perhaps. But I would say that I think if you read the article, I used it in context in a way that I think makes sense, and I can get into the specific comparisons of those games if you like. But it's you kind of have to remember about like the audience that I'm writing for, right? It's not a hardcore Monster Hunter audience. It's sort of an esoteric topic for us to cover, and especially when you consider the narrative of this game being, you know, Capcom really trying to draw in new users and new players, because if it doesn't, I don't think this game is going to be very successful. I think it's important to kind of meet people on their level, and you know, like kind of put the game in context in a way that if they might be interested, even if they're not familiar with the series.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you. Because I do this weekly Monster Hunter show with my friend Micah, who's not here, just because you're in Japan right now, so it's like a weird scheduling thing. But I mean, I read your article. I love the article. I love The Verge. So it was awesome. It's awesome to see video game stuff on The Verge, because your sister site Polygon usually covers that. So when something makes it to The Verge, video game related, that's awesome, because that's definitely probably seeing more eyes that normally wouldn't see video games, I'm assuming.
Yeah, so Polygon doesn't really share anything with us editorially. Like it's sort of like, you know, we're both part of Vox Media, but that's kind of, that's like how like a magazine publisher has different magazines, right? And you know, there was someone from Polygon, Chelsea, who, you know, did her own coverage based from the same event in Osaka that I was at. And yeah, so, you know, we don't really collaborate on things beyond the fact that I played Monster Hunter with Chelsea. She was out at my table. But yeah. I mean, I think we have a different approach to covering video games, right? Polygon is a lot more comprehensive. They'll cover like all the new releases. We're a bit more selective, and we try to cover things that we think will be interesting to our audience.
I want to talk about your background here, because I read your article and stuff, and the one take, and I thought it was great, and I think it's a, like, if I wasn't into Monster Hunter, I think your article captured what it should have, which is, oh, like, this game sounds really cool, which is the point, I'm assuming, is like, oh, I'm now interested in this game called Monster Hunter because of The Verge or because of whatever other site I read it on. But the one takeaway I didn't get from your article is what your experience as a Monster Hunter player is. Like, I think I know the answer, but I'm just going to, you know, pretend I don't to start a conversation. Is this your first time playing, or have you been a long time Monster Hunter fan?
Oh, no, I'm a long time Monster Hunter fan. Like, I mentioned it a little bit in the article, but I guess I didn't go into detail. I first got into the series when I was living in Osaka, like in 2008, 2009. And so I was playing the PSP games mostly. Like, I guess the first one I played was Second G. And the one that I played the most was Portable Third, which I think is still the biggest selling title in the series. Right then in Japan, it was really impossible to escape Monster Hunter. It was this huge hit, and you would get on a train and like half the people in the carriage would just be playing Monster Hunter on their PSPs, and like people would just go to bars to play it, or like just with strangers in the street and stuff. It was this like crazy social phenomenon, and so yeah, I got really into it on the PSP and played a fair bit of Try on the Wii U, but I didn't like it quite as much because, you know, for me it was mostly about the kind of social aspect, right? Like playing local multiplayer in public on a portable, and yeah, so I didn't play the 3DS ones so much because that sort of happened after I moved to Tokyo, and I used to have a crew that I would play with in Osaka basically, and I guess I kind of fell out of that loop a bit. But I played 4 and 4G, but not to the same degree that I played Portable Third in particular, and I skipped generations, but I've been playing Double Cross on Switch for the last couple of months.
I've imported Double Cross, and the language barrier is a little tough, but I feel like it's worth it.
Yeah, it's funny. Like I've actually never played a Monster Hunter game in English. Like so, when I was playing World at Capcom's HQ, it was a little strange because I wasn't quite sure if any of the localization or like the monster names were sort of new. Like some things that seemed unfamiliar to me were like, oh, actually, yeah, that's just something I've just known as another name for like 10 years.
So you got like 2 full days with Monster Hunter World while out in Osaka, correct?
Yeah, we played about I played about 12, 13 hours, I would say, over the course of a couple of days.
I guess, like, I mean, you obviously expressed your opinions and how you felt about it in the article, but I guess I'm asking like again, and like what you felt or how exciting was it, or, you know, just kind of your overall thoughts going through, and maybe something you didn't mention in the article, just generalized. Sure. I guess.
Sure. So I guess going back to what we were saying a little bit earlier about how, you know, it's important to kind of like grab people and get them into the series. I've always thought that Monster Hunter, like as a concept, is, it shouldn't be this thing that's difficult to get, right? Like it seems kind of like the kind of thing that should be immediately appealing to a lot of people, right? It's just like you're hanging out with friends and hunting monsters and getting awesome armor and like looking cool and feeling like a badass, right? Like it's a pretty high concept game, but there's always been sort of various barriers to its success or like people getting into it and so on. And I guess what I would say most about World is like they've kept that action, that the core action is not changed that much at all. There are sort of changes to the surrounding of it, but it's more about the kind of structural framework that is completely different. And I think it's going to make a big difference to accessibility, because it's just so much easier to get into a game. If you're already in a game, it's easier to get help in the game. It's easier to kind of like just do basic things like keep track of the monster and so on. I think it's smart what they've done to kind of make the game easier to get into, but without kind of compromising what people really like about the series in the first place.
Do you think that it being on consoles is the right choice, or it I always hear about like these stories, and you even said it, of the people on the bus playing PSP, and Monster Hunter became a huge hit because of this, but this is not portable at all anymore.
Right. It's definitely risky, right? Because I think even in Japan, if you look at kind of how the sales of the series have gone, I don't think Tri sold as well as the PSP games at all. And, you know, it's been sort of on 3DS ever since, which is a kind of, you know, that platform is what it is. It sold pretty well, but like not, I don't think it's going to have much growth from here on out. So like, I think the main risk is that consoles in Japan are not doing that well now either, right? Like the PS4 has not sold particularly well. I think it's at like 5 or 6 million at this point. So in order for this game to sell like a couple of million or a few million in Japan, it's going to need this crazy high attach rate, right? Like half the PS4 owners in Japan are going to need to buy this game for it to be a sort of traditional sales success by Capcom standards. So I think they really are banking on global appeal with this game. If this game doesn't sell well in the West, like I don't think Capcom's going to consider it a success. But I think there's maybe an element of sort of investing for the future of the series as well, right? Like obviously this game must have had a bigger budget than the other ones, but that it's certainly something they can build off in the future. But yeah, like it's going to be tough, right? Because I think the biggest portion of the player base right now doesn't necessarily own a PS4 in Japan. But on the other hand, I think if they ever were to really pursue the West and go for success there, like what other choice do they have, right? Like it's beyond overdue for the series to get like a legit technical upgrade with modern graphics and so on, and like, you know, treating the internet like a sort of base function rather than this optional add-on like the other games have done. But I think it's the right choice to answer your question eventually, but I think it definitely comes with risk, and it'll be interesting to see what happens in the future of the series, right? Because it's hard for me to imagine that there won't be another portable Monster Hunter game at some point, you know, that would be a really strange thing to do for the series.
When you were playing over the 2 days, how did the other journalists or the other people there, how were they feeling? Because you obviously had Monster Hunter experience, you knew what you were getting into. But yeah. I don't know if everyone else there had Monster Hunter experience.
Some of them didn't, and some of them did. And I think everyone that I was with like seemed to be getting on pretty well with the game. Like Chelsea over at Polygon, she doesn't have much experience with the series, and that's how she framed her coverage, right? She was like, I'm a Monster Hunter newbie, and I played a bunch of World, and I really dug it. Whereas other, like I was speaking to Martin Robinson from Eurogamer, who has a sort of similar history with the series as me, and he thought like pretty much the same thing I did. That it's great if you're a fan of the series, but we kind of can see how it's probably going to do a better job at attracting new players.
The Scout Flies. Do you have any talking points with that and how that worked? When I played it at PAX West, I actually liked the Scout Flies a lot. I didn't mind them. I thought they were cool. But do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think the thing with the Scout Flies, as with a lot of what they've done to kind of like change the flow of the game, is you don't really have to use them, right? Like if you wanted to just look for the monster in whichever section of the map it was in, as in previous games, like you can do that. I think the Scout Flies, it's like a little bit of a confusing mechanic at first, I think, because because of the way that you kind of like you level up different things, like the footprints or like the mucus that the monster leaves behind and stuff, and it's not always clear exactly what they're going to latch onto, especially if there are multiple monsters in the area. But I definitely think it's been a barrier to players in the past, right? Like, because if the map is huge and you don't know where you're going, people are going to spend, you know, 5-10 minutes just looking for the monster and kind of not really having any idea what they're doing. And it's a bit of an unwelcoming thing, I think, at the start of each Monster Hunter game. I think it's fine, really. Like I say, I think you can ignore them. And I think it's a pretty neat replacement for the paintball, ultimately. But also, like, once you found the monster, it pretty much just appears on the map. So, like, I guess it's just more of a streamlining thing. But, like, one of the things that I like about what they've done with this game is that you really can kind of change a lot of, they've changed a lot of things, but you can still play the old way, like, just in terms of the controls and so on. Like, if you want to, like, I think most new players will probably select items and stuff by doing, like, the circular interface on the R stick. But if you want to do it the old way and kind of like hold down L and press square and circle to like cycle through things, you can do that as well. So I think it's a change that they've kind of added with a view to like not changing the overall flow of the game. But I do think it'll make it easier for players to get used to the game at the start.
Yeah, I was definitely the L with circle square back and forth. The stick was like, this is all new and I'll do it the old way.
Yeah. It's cool that they've kind of like just layered the control schemes on top of each other. Like it's the same with the run button as well. You can use R or you can use like clicking in L3, I think. Yeah, and there's all these touches like that where there are kind of things that just sort of you can take them or leave them, which I think is the right approach, right? Because you don't want to throw away like a decade's worth of muscle memory with your biggest fans, but at the same time, it's good to be realistic about the fact that it is a pretty weird controlling game in a lot of ways. So.
I feel like I'm jumping around, but for being in Japan, being in that region, that area, and knowing the series, are you seeing Monster Hunter World advertisements anywhere? Is it getting promoted? Is it getting like talked about? I know that's kind of like the big worry here in that mm-hmm. aspect of like, hey, this isn't portable anymore. It's on PS4 and PC. Is it going to do well here? That same question applies to America. Is it going to do well here?
Yeah. No, I'm seeing a lot of promotion actually. If you go to, you know, the release is still some way out, but if you go to like electronic stores or whatever, there are big TV screens playing the trailer, and there was kind of a flurry to pre-order the special edition PS4 Pro, like the Rathalos one, and it's easily the biggest game of the show, and like even on the business days that aren't open to the public, like if you weren't lining up by like, you know, 45 minutes after they opened the doors, like you weren't getting into play it that day, like they just stopped letting people line up because the crowds were so high. So yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely a lot of promotion and interest around this game. I would say more so than like for Cross, for example. Like it's more like it feels like a bigger deal. I mean, whether that's actually going to translate into like sales, it's obviously something we can't know. But I would say it's not. If you're a Monster Hunter fan in Japan, you're aware of this game, put it that way.
Cool. I have to ask, favorite weapon, and what did you play with multiple weapons while you were out in Osaka?
I am normally a great sword person, but since Double Crust, I've been doing the Slash Axe a bit more, and that is what I played most of the time in Osaka. Things haven't really changed too much for most of the melee weapons. I would say like the controls are all kind of more or less the same. The gunner stuff is completely different, and I never really got the hang of gunner controls in either of the games, and I tried them out a bit on this, and it seems a lot easier, but I'm not really sort of familiar with the mechanics in general, so I didn't spend too much time on that.
Oh man, this question might not work. I was going to say, is there a favorite monster? But I think you have different names for most monsters.
Oh yeah, you mean throughout the whole series?
Or? Yeah. I assume in Japan you just hunted like Rathalos, Anjanath, Great Jaggerus.
Yeah, there was Puke Puke, Tobi Kadachi, which Tobi Kadachi was my favorite from the world monsters. I think that's a really cool design. It's like a kind of snake wolf. Playing squirrel electric thing, to go back to the whole series question, like my favorite overall is probably I guess in English Zinoga, in Japanese pronounced Jinoga, like the portable third.
Okay.
And Tobi Kadachi kind of reminded me of that a bit, you know, like a sort of sleek, like fast moving electric kind of it's a similar kind of design. I don't know if Jinoga is going to be in world, so it'll serve that purpose pretty well. So to finish what else there was in world, I think the first kind of main hunt was Great Jaguars. Then, yeah, like there was a Puke Puke and Juratados, which is sort of like a plesiothin mud. Anjana, then Tobikadachi and Baroth. Maybe a couple more I'm forgetting. But yeah, like I got up to the 4-star crests and we weren't allowed to play beyond that. So, which was very frustrating because it was right there in the menu and wasn't allowed to continue. But I guess I'll have to wait till January.
Yeah. And there was a story to go along with that, right? Because there's no longer like hub and village quests. It's just kind of one streamlined quest system now.
Yeah, it's what they've done with the quest system, I think, is pretty cool. Like the story stuff, it's definitely out of step for the series because it's very, you know, like kind of like heavy on cutscenes and there's like set pieces and sort of interactive moments that teach you the controls and stuff. At least the intro is that way. And I mean, you know, like I don't know how much of the game is going to be like that, but like my suspicion is probably not a ton, but. But yeah, like it gets you into the game in a kind of like action game type way. Like, well, it's almost like a JRPG in the setup, right? But then, yeah. Once you get to the village, you have this single hub, and there's like one character, sort of, you know, like the person who would give you the quests in previous games. She's like a sort of very fleshed out character that like speaks to you a lot and gives you the quests. And when you talk to her, it's not just like Yeah, even once you're talking to her, it's not like you just have this one list of quests. Everything is broken down into different types of quests. So like the key quests from previous games are now just called assigned, and they're the ones that move the story forward. So then there's like optional quests, which you can use for, you know, like grinding and so on. And the gathering quests basically don't exist anymore, as far as I can tell. There are similar tasks that you can kind of stack up and kind of keep in the background and do them while you're doing the other quests and sort of... you know, get loot and upgrades and points and stuff that way. So I think the system is a lot more approachable, that's for sure. But I guess one thing that I'm not totally clear on is the online. So the online and offline distinction is not there anymore, right? There's no kind of like online only quests. But what you do when you first start the game and choose your character and your save file is you kind of like have to either create or join a lobby and like go into like an instance of the game. And I was just playing on, you know, Capcom's servers over a local area network. So, yeah. You know, with all the journalists there. So in practice, I'm not totally sure how that's going to work in terms of like how big the lobbies are and like how easy it is to kind of like jump into one and sort of it's not like a persistent world like Destiny, right? Where like players are just going to fit in and out. You do kind of need to kind of get into a specific instance of the game, it seems like. So and once you do that, that means you can do things like fire off sirens in the middle of a quest to get help from players that are in your world and that kind of thing, which I think is going to be really cool. But it's just one thing I haven't really got a sense of yet with the game is like how seamless an experience that is going to be in practice and how easy it is to get into games.
Yeah. Speaking about like jumping into games, did you try the like flying to another person feature?
Yeah, I did not, but someone did it to me, and yeah, like it is what it is. But I think it's like I said, it's part of the instance you're in, right? You sort of already need to be in the game with them. Yeah, like I'm it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out in practice because it's because potentially it's awesome, right? Like to not have to kind of like think about all these like lobby systems and like all the things you need to do before the game. Like one thing that I did run into a couple of times is if you are trying to play like a certain quest with someone else. I mean, this probably isn't going to be an issue in practice, really thinking about it, but it's like if one player is with you and you want to do like one of the assigned quests for the first time, you can't like both do it for the first time if the other player has already played the quest, because you know how when you see a monster for the first time, there's like a kind of like mini cutscene that like introduces them to you,
right?
Like if it doesn't really seamlessly kind of show that for the player that has already seen that cutscene, so what you have to do is like one player has to join the quest and get to the monster and find the monster, and then the other player has to join. And so there's things like that, which I think are like they could be kind of janky, and like I don't know, like obviously it's a pre-production build of the game, right? And maybe things like that will get ironed out. But yeah, like I guess overall I'm just a little curious about how this kind of syncing of multiplayer and single player is going to work in practice, because it could be the best thing about the game, or it could be kind of something that doesn't really work out that well compared to others.
Well, I think I'm out of questions, but I guess to, you know, circle back to the first quote, Monster Hunter is Destiny crossed with Dark Souls and dinosaurs. Like I said at the beginning, I agree with it. When people ask me what Monster Hunter is like, I do point to, I usually say, oh, it's like Dark Souls in the aspect of it's not a hack and slash. You just can't go in there and hit X or square or circle or triangle as fast as you can and hope that you kill the monster. It's more, you have to learn the monster's movements. You have to see its moves. It has tells. It moves right. Like an animal. And I think that's where you were going with the Dark Souls thing of, hey, it's not an action game.
Yeah, so it's, well, a lot of the feedback I got was I feel like people are frustrated by things being compared to Dark Souls a lot, right? Which I understand. But some people thought that I'm making that comparison just to make the point that Monster Hunter is hard. And yeah, it's not about that at all. It's about, as you say, the fact that, you know, the combat systems in both games are very measured, right? And they're kind of, they're deep and rewarding and difficult at first, but you kind of get out of them what you put into, right? And but aside from that, it's also to make the point that you know, Dark Souls was sort of an unexpected hit in the West, right? It's not the kind of game that that would necessarily have been expected to find the success that it did outside of Japan. And I guess what I'm saying with a Dark Souls comparison, or not explicitly, but this is sort of what I was getting at, is that if a game like Dark Souls can be popular in the West, then I don't think there's really any barriers to Monster Hunter in terms of the combat system, right? Like I think people could get into it in the same way. And I didn't have to say Dark Souls. Like I could have said Nioh, right? Or some other Japanese game that has gotten popular recently. But yeah, like I think it fits with the overall narrative of the piece and what Capcom is trying to say, right? Which is that this is a game that kind of it's going to need to find fans, and there are things that are difficult things about the series for people to get into, and the question is whether they will take to it. But I think, like I say, I think they will. I think the action is like it. If people can get into Dark Souls, they can get into this game, right? But to my mind, it's probably a bit more accessible than Dark Souls, even. And to be honest, like I'm not even a huge Dark Souls fan, right? It's not like I'm saying it, comparing it to this game because it's like a game that I'm a huge fan of. I'm a lot more into Monster Hunter than I am into Dark Souls. And to the Destiny comparison, this is something that I actually wrote about like 2 or 3 years ago when I think it was 4 Ultimate came out in the West, and it was just after Destiny. I guess it was like a few months after Destiny came out, and I don't know if you remember, but like Destiny got pretty bad reviews when it first came out, right? Like it was a very kind of like threadbare release at first, and a lot of the reviews were making complaints like, oh, you have to go to the same areas all the time, and you're dependent on time over time. And I read these reviews and I was like, this just sounds like Monster Hunter. Maybe I should play this game. And I did. And it turns out that what I like about Destiny is what I like about Monster Hunter, right? Like it's kind of this interesting structure. And I actually think the loop in Monster Hunter is a lot more rewarding than in Destiny because it's more focused, right? Like the way you kind of fight smaller monsters to get materials and weapons and armor so that you can fight bigger ones, and it just kind of goes on like that. It's a lot more focused, whereas Destiny is sort of complicated with the campaign and like the multiplayer and all these random quests and so on. It's not quite as doesn't have the same sense of progression as Monster Hunter. But
everything is random in Destiny.
Yeah, everything is a lot more random, right? Like you can't really grind a particular monster in Destiny to get a particular thing. I definitely think Destiny is a game that took a lot of inspiration from Monster Hunter. Like I've spoken to people at Bungie since writing that article, and you know they've said as much. And you know, like it's just as Monster Hunter took sort of similar influence from like, you know, Phantasy Star Online and that kind of thing. It's about like taking a lot of MMO kind of style things and putting them in a more sort of single player context. So yeah, like I mean I think that ultimately Destiny and Dark Souls and Dinosaurs is a reasonable comparison. but yeah, like I say, I can see how people might find it a little bit simplistic. Yes. when taken out of context.
Yes. I think it kind of speaks a little bit to Dark Souls that everyone loves to compare everything under the sun to Dark Souls. But that's like good.
Yeah, yeah.
That's like good because Dark Souls wasn't supposed, like Dark Souls was never pitched as this huge hit. It was like this overnight,
yeah,
out of nowhere game. And I hope that Destiny is actually Dark Souls in that aspect of like, I hope it blows up.
Yeah, so it... Yeah, I know what you're saying, right? It is very strange for like that to kind of be the byword for a specific type of game these days, because yeah, like it could have been anything really, but the point is it did take off, and I think I think Dark Souls is it was very much like a word of mouth kind of hit, right? And I think Monster Hunter was the same in Japan, right? I think that's kind of how the series really got popular at first, was because people wanted to play, you know, with their friends and stuff, and the portable nature of, you know, obviously the games had some level of success on PS2 first, but the series really took off. It was kind of like an original viral hit, right? But like, because people would play it on PSP and like show people, like, here's what I'm doing, like you should play this with me. And yeah, like I think that World has that potential, but it's not going to be the same way, right? Because you can't show someone your PS4, like, but I think the key to this game's success will be people getting other people into it, right? Like, I don't think most people in Japan like decided to play Monster Hunter by themselves and solo it, because I don't think, like frankly, I don't think enough of them would have had a good experience that way for the series to be the hit that it is, right? So I think this game is definitely going to need like a kind of, you know, strong word of mouth impressions and kind of, you know, people getting their friends to play with them and stuff. Like I think the beta in next month is likely to be helpful there, you know, like to give people a chance to like check it out and kind of spend a bit more time with it than they would at a show or just with a demo or whatever. Yeah, we'll see. It's going to be interesting. Like I said before, I think I would be surprised if there wasn't another portable entry in the series at some point, though. Like the Switch is kind of the perfect system for Monster Hunter on paper, right? So like, I don't know, maybe all is not lost if World doesn't take off, but
that's like a whole nother conversation though.
Yeah, but like personally I would really like to see a kind of like a Switch version that's like what Portable Third was to try, like kind of if you could do something to World like that. You know, cut down some of the more ambitious things, but kind of put it in a portable context. Because, like I said, that's how I got into the series, and you know, like I have great affection for Monster Hunter as a portable series. It's something that I like to play on, you know, trains and stuff. So, yeah, like but I hope World is successful, of course, but I hope it's not like every game in the series future is going to be like it.
All right, well, I think that's all I got. I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but if you want, where can... Do you want our listeners to find you and your articles, or are you...
I don't know. It depends. It depends if they're going to yell at me for talking about Dark Souls. But if they want to say nice things, they can find my work on TheVerge.com. And my Twitter account is 345Triangle. And I'm happy to answer any questions and so on about World that anyone may have.
Awesome. Cool. Well, thank you so much, Sam.
Cool. Thanks, Steve.
Yeah, I appreciate it. We'll go back. I'll bring Micah back with the magic of editing, and we'll talk some more Monster Hunter after our break. We're back. Here we are.
Hope you enjoyed that interview. Welcome back.
Welcome.
Welcome.
To the car.
To the car.
Welcome back. We're going to do our Monster of the Week. This week's monster is Astalos. So take it away, Micah.
Astalos is an electric wyvern of the thunder element. And its ailments include Thunderblight, Paralysis, and Stun in G rank. And it's weak to ice and water. The physiology for Astalos is its body is almost entirely covered in sharp, dark green plating, although it has a more bright-colored underside. Unlike any other flying wyvern, Astalos' wings resemble those of an insect, most precisely a glass-wing butterfly's wings. Its thin legs have three toes, its tail is long, making up almost half of the monster's length, and it has two pair of earwig-like pincers at the tip, which is gross, because earwigs are gross.
Yeah, they are.
It has a relatively small head with a big horn on top of it. Its eyes are red. As far as abilities go, Astalos has green electricity surging throughout its body, and it is able to release it from just about every part of its body. The main parts that this electricity surges from are its wings, tail, and horn.
Surge was a good energy drink.
It was pretty good. Had a good return. It's still around, but I don't think anybody cares anymore.
I care.
The hype has died.
A little bit of trivia here. The idea for its wings to generate electricity came from crickets, which use their forewings to chirp. Astalos' design is heavily based on insects. Its tail comes from a dragonfly, and its comb, or horn, comes from tree hoppers. Astalos can electrically charge its head, wings, or tail when attacking to increase the power of its attack. When it charges its head, its eyes will turn neon, and its horn will get an axe-like shape. When it charges its wings, its webbing will turn transparent, and the veins and spikes will glow bright green. And when it charges its tail, the pincers at the tip will glow green and change shape. It will also be able to infect Paralysis with some tail-based attacks. Astalos will recover stamina by eating from a carcass. When exhausted, Astalos will lose all body charge it has at the moment. And similar to Zenogre, Astalos can be fully charged by being caught in a shock trap. However, Astalos can lose its charge from shock traps if a part is fully charged. And Astaloses are always male. They're never female.
There you have it.
And it was introduced in 2015 in Monster Hunter Cross. Obviously, it is in Monster Hunter Double Cross.
Correct. And Generations.
Yeah, and Generations.
It's pretty much all the same.
It's all the same.
Astalos is very cool. Probably one of my favorite more recent monsters.
I like it a lot. I'm a big fan of the armor set abilities it has, too.
As far as design goes, I like it a lot. I'm a big fan of like kaiju monsters and like design for kaiju monsters. And there are lots of them that draw from like insect physiology or like crustacean physiology, which is kind of similar. And I think I like it. I like the pincers and the, I don't know, the glowing electricity and the glowing horns, and I don't know, it's cool.
It's the Pikachu of Monster Hunter.
I don't know, sure.
I'm just kidding.
We'll just forever start compare. This is the podcast where we'll just, from now on, going forward, compare other things to Monster Hunter.
To other things.
Yeah. Compare Monster Hunter to other things.
I'm pretty burnt out of the Dark Souls joke.
Yeah. It wore out its welcome pretty quick.
Good. Good. Hopefully in the future we don't have to joke about it.
You get one episode.
You get one episode of this. We went hog ham this time.
You could say it's the Dark Souls of episodes.
All right.
Make it through it.
We hunt every single Thursday night on Twitch. Twitch.tv/PKMNcast. Usually starting around 8 p.m. Central Time. And I usually take those hunts well into midnight. So please stop by if you're interested in hanging out. Just be playing Double Cross until World comes out. We do have plans for streaming pretty much all 3 days that Monster Hunter World is out. But we can talk about that once we get closer to those dates.
Yeah.
Micah can be found on Twitter @MicahTheBrave. You can follow me on Twitter at Dragging a Lake. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Carve Podcast, C-A-R-V-E Podcast. And if you have like 30 seconds in your day, you should leave us a review on Apple Podcasts / iTunes / however you get to the Apple Store. Just go into an Apple Store.
Just
and say,
take out your phone.
I want to review this show.
Show it to them and say, can I review this? Can I give you my review?
Make a Genius Bar appointment.
Yep.
For reviewing our show.
Drive 30 minutes. You can listen to the show, half of the show on the way there.
You're going to want to go ahead and call AppleCare.
Yeah.
And let them know that you need 30 seconds to review our show. No, seriously, if you... giving us a review in iTunes helps other people find the show, boosts that visibility. Free to you. Helps us out greatly.
Yeah.
We'd appreciate it. 5 stars. 5 poogies out of 5.
Yeah.
Please.
HR 5.
No higher or lower, just HR 5. We hit high rank, we're good. We don't need anything else. Who needs G rank?
That's the story of my double cross save file right now.
Who needs G rank when you got a high rank? That's that. We will be back next week, of course. Keep on hunting those monsters.
And keep on carving those monsters.
The Carve is hosted and produced by me, Steve Black Jr. Logo and artwork for The Carve was created by Micah, the co-host of this show. The music by Nicholas Burgess. If you enjoy The Carve, consider leaving a review in Apple Podcasts or tell a fellow hunter about us. If you'd like to support The Carve, you can do so at patreon.com/carvepodcast. For as little as $1 a month, you'll gain access to our Discord to bone up with other hunters who listen to the show. Big shout-outs to The Carve's Life Powder supporters, Austin B., Kay, Gavin M., Harley, and Brandon. Thank you all for listening.